And we're holding on Lamed Aleph Omud Beis at the beginning of the Gemara. So six lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah a bunch of things about the greatness of Bris Milah. We started by talking about when a person makes a neder not to have hana from people who are uncircumcised, that we're saying it doesn't include Jews, even if physically they're not. If he makes a neder and vice versa, it means that he's also an all goyim, to have hana from all goyim, even if they are physically circumcised. The opposite, if he says, I'm making a neder not to have hana from anybody who's circumcised. And that led the Mishnah into a bunch of statements from Tanoim about the greatness of Bris Milah. So one of them was, we said, that we see how great Bris Milah was. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha said in the Mishnah that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he delayed Bris Milah, he was immediately punished, as we're going to see now in the Gemara. So Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, Gdola Milah, we see that, how great Milah is. She calls Choyas Cha'asa Moshe Rabbeinu. We see all the great, wonderful merits that Moshe had. None of them stood him in good stead. To save him, when he was careless, when he was careless and postponed Bris Milah, his son, Shenema, as the pasuk says, Vayishehu Hashem, Hashem encountered him, Vayivakesh Hamisa, and wanted to kill him. So we see that, and the reason, and we see afterwards in the psukim that Tzipora made a Bris Milah for their son, and then Moshe was saved. So we see that he was in trouble just for that, just for delaying the Bris Milah. But the Gemara, the Braisa continues, Omar Rebbe, but Rebbe says, or Hagoy Sabach changes it to Rabbi Yossi, says, Chas v'sholem shemoshe Rabbeinu nisrashom ben Amila, Chas v'sholem, to say that Moshe was careless with Bris Milah, that he delayed it for no good reason. Ela kach Omar, no, Moshe actually had a good reason to delay the Bris Milah of his son. Nevertheless, though, Hashem still held it against him because Hashem treats, well, that's what we're going to see in a minute, then why Hashem held it against him. So what was Moshe's cheshbon? Elakach Omer. Moshe thought to himself like this: Omer ve'etze, should I wait and do the Bris Milah for my son and then set out? Remember, Hashem had told him this was. So he had been in Midian by. He had been by Har Sinai. He had the whole experience with the snare over there, where Hashem told him to go take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. He argued with Hashem for a week, whatever. Then Hashem tells him go back to Midian. And Hashem tells him to go to, so he goes back, actually, not Hashem tells him, he goes back to Midian, he tells Yisrael that it's safe for me to return to Mitzrayim, please give me permission to go, and Yisrael tells him, Leich L'Shalom, and then he takes his wife and children and sets out. So now Moshe is thinking to himself, if I give the child the Bris Milah, and then I leave, Sakonim, then it'll be a danger for the child. We find by Shechem, on the third day when they were in pain, then Shimon and Levi attacked and killed them. So we see that the third day is particularly, we see that 3 days, now the Ran explains over here, doesn't mean specifically the third day, doesn't mean the first and second days are not dangerous and the third day is. Adraba. And what it means, if that's the case, then why is Moshe worried? Let him maul the child when as long as it's less than 3 days trip to Mitzrayim. No, what it is it's dangerous throughout the whole 3 days, the Ram learns. So the reason why Shimon and Levi particularly picked the third day to attack Shem is because since for 3 days in a row they'd been in pain, then now their pain is at a peak. And therefore, they figured they'll be weakest of all, but not to say that the first and second days are not dangerous as well.
So is that not the worst?
The third. So that's the thing. The Ran learns that it's not that the third day is the worst. It's that they waited until the third day because then that way they've been in pain for 3 days straight. The Ran learns.
Well,
again,
it's the worst in terms of pain, not in terms of danger, basically.
Right. So with that said, though, not everybody agrees to that. And there are, in fact, Mephoshim on Shabbos, in particular, when it talks about these dinim related to Bris Milah, there are Mephoshim who learn that, no, what it means is the first 2 days are not particularly dangerous, only the third day. But our Gemara seems to be more implying, like the way the Ran says, that it means that the whole first 3 days are dangerous. Anyway, so Moshe figures then, therefore, so I can't give the baby a bris before I set out on the way. Well, Omo v'esha shlosha yamim, should I instead make for a Bris Milah for the baby and then wait for the and then wait for the 3 days? No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amali Leich Shuv Mitzrayim. Hashem told me, go return to Mitzrayim. So how can I sit around waiting for 3 days? Marsha mentions, and in particular, the Mizrahi on Rashi learns the second way, that it's particularly the third day that's dangerous, not so much the first 2 days. But Or Gemara seems to fit better with the way the Ran is saying. So what can I do? So I can't make the bris and then leave right away. It'll be dangerous. I can't delay the 3 days because Hashem told me to go. So therefore, he figured I'm going to have to make the bris milah later on. So Rebbe or Rabbi Yossi says, so why indeed was Moshe punished? Isn't that a valid point? The reason is because when they stopped off on the way, he got involved first in arranging their lodgings. It should be as soon as they stopped off at a place, and both the Ran and the Meforish and the Rosh, all of them explain that this Molon, this inn where they were staying, was very close to Mitzrayim. At that point, then, there's no problem of doing a bris milah because soon enough, they'll be in a couple of hours, they'll be in Mitzrayim. So the problem was that he started getting involved in arranging their lodgings first. The first thing he should do once they have a stopover, and again, it's close enough to Mitzrayim that now they can continue traveling afterwards and there won't be a danger, he should have done that. He should have done the bris milah right away. And instead, he was nisasik b'molon. Instead, he was involved in arranging their lodgings first.
Don't you have to get into a lodge and not do it?
No, that's the point is apparently not. Apparently, the Gemara's understanding that he could have just asked for a room for a minute to do for a few minutes, whatever, to do the bris, and then arrange for a place where we're going to stay the night and where we're going to put the animal and so forth. And instead, the point seems to be that he was arranging, we need a room to stay, we need this and this and this arrangements in it, and then so therefore that was held against him.
Nowadays, yes.
Well, one second, before you make a bris, it sounds very reasonable to have a place where you'll rest after the bris and not knowing and start looking around.
Sure. For Moshe Rabbeinu, obviously Hashem had higher standards expected of him, that he should have at least, maybe even the idea would be that fine, if part of his arrangements were that he's thinking we need a room for the mother and baby to recuperate afterwards, maybe that's one thing. It sounds like the Gemara is saying he was arranging just a mullah, just a place to stay, without even considering what the needs are as far as the bris. After we settle in over there, then we'll figure out what to do about the bris. And so Hashem held that against him, that he should, the bris should be uppermost on his mind, that even maybe his arrangements for the lodgings themselves should be with the bris in mind. Seems to be the idea.
I remember that Aaron meets them and she ends up going back with the baby.
Aaron meets them and they end up going, she ends up going back with the baby.
Trip. Danger and everything with a bris.
Well, at that time, Moshe didn't know that's going to happen. But in any case, the point is she could have stayed there a couple of days. Aaron tells him, don't take them to Mitzrayim, fine. But that still doesn't mean that she couldn't have waited there a couple of days with the baby to recuperate and then head back to, as it is, she went back to Midian on her own with the babies anyhow. So if she has to first wait there in the Molon for 3 days, big deal, you know.
I had slaves.
Yeah, probably this time they had servants with them, whatever, yeah. Okay. Now, all of this is assuming that it was Moshe Rabbeinu in danger. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha and Rebbe or Rabbi Yossi are both taking the view that when the Pasuk describes Vayivakesh HaMisoi, that Hashem wanted to kill him, that him refers to Moshe Rabbeinu. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, never mind all of that. Loyla Moshe Rabbeinu Bikesh Satan Larig, it wasn't the Satan or Oisei Malach is a different Girsa, that Malach wasn't about to kill Moshe, Elo Oisei Tino. Rather, it was the baby that he was going to kill. Shenema ki chasan domim atali, because we see when Tzipora ended up doing the bris, she says, "You are a chasan of blood to me." So now, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying she's not referring by that to her husband Moshe, and Marashar explains because at that point he's not a chasan anymore; they've been married for years. So therefore, the word chasan is inappropriate. So he says, "Say re'e mi kori chasan, go and look who is it." That is called a chosan. The Rosh says the expression, the Ran says the expression, shenasa chosan ayde bris, that he becomes a chosan, he becomes like the one who's celebrating through the bris. And the Rosh says, shemachatnin oseb a mitzvah rishona, that we make him a chosan with his very first mitzvah. So heveyam is ahtina. So therefore, that would be the baby. Therefore, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying that your whole premise that Moshe was in danger because he failed to do the bris milah, he's saying that's not correct. The Pasuk is not saying that Moshe was ever in danger, but rather that the baby was in danger. So in the Mishnah then, when Rabbi Shua ben Korcha is saying, look how great Mila is, that even the great Tzaddik Moshe, his punishment came immediately when he failed to be careful about Bris Mila, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying you can't prove anything from that, because it wasn't Moshe, wasn't ever in danger in the first place.
It's on the father to do it.
It's on the father to do it. Ah, so Marsha mentions over here a point. There's a Medrash that says that Yisroel, before he allowed his daughter Tzipora to marry Moshe, had made Moshe agree that there was going to be one of his children that he's not going to mal, and that he's actually going to, in fact, Yisroel had told him that, I want to have that one of your children that you have with her, you should not mal, and you should raise to worship Avodah Zarah. And Moshe agreed to that, because otherwise he wouldn't allow him to marry Tzipora. There's the famous question, how is Yisroel himself? Yisroel was already a ger by that point. He had already, he officially became a ger when he joined the Jewish people. But even then, he had already given up Avodah Zarah. That's why the shepherds were attacking his daughters at the well, and Moshe had to save them. So he had already given up on Avodah Zarah. Why is he making such a t'nai on Moshe? So there's an interesting idea that they say,
didn't become a virtue only once he met Moshe's
daughter. No, so that's the virtue. In other words, before Moshe ever came on the scene, Yisroel had already researched all the Avodah Zarah in the world and concluded that all of them are false, and he's giving up on them. And therefore, that is why when his daughters came to the well, that first of all, that's why he had to send his daughters in the first place. If he's Kohen Midian, he's the leader, he's the leader and the priest of Midian, why do his own daughters have to go and draw water anyway? He doesn't have servants to do it, because nobody wanted to work for him anymore. And when they sent his daughters to the well, the shepherds, the Goyish shepherds, came and chased them away until Moshe came and saved them and watered their sheep. So by that point already, Yisroel had already given up on Avodah Zarah. So why is he making such a t'nai with Moshe? So there's an interesting idea that's brought in Mefarshim. Yisroel figured, in a way, when a person becomes a Baal Teshuva on their own, and they discover the Eveshtah on their own, like he did, like Avraham did, Yisroel figured that's a much more powerful thing than if you taught it from childhood. You taught it from childhood, then you come to think, I grew up with this. Like, you don't really delve deeply into it. You don't think that. So Yisroel figured, I want that one of my descendants, that one of my grandsons should be raised the same way as I was, believe in Avodah Zarah. Eventually, on his own, like I did, he will realize how foolish Avodah Zarah is and abandon it and come to discover Hashem on his own. So it's a svara, but it's not a svara api Torah, of course. I mean, chas v'shalom, we don't say we raise our kids without Yiddishkeit and let them discover it on their own, yeah. So that's what it was. So Moshe had made such a deal with Yisroel. So therefore, Reb Shimon Gamliel is learning that you can't say that Moshe was careless with the milah of his son. He had made a promise to Yisroel that he's not going to mal the son. Therefore, what happened was, so normally it should be a mitzvah on the father. But in this case, the father is out of the picture, in effect. So therefore, what happened was, when Tzipora realized that the baby is in danger, she started doing the bris milah. And then, now the Gemara in Avodah Zarah has a discussion, is a woman allowed to do a bris milah? It's machlokas in the Gemara over there, where the fact is, a man, of course, is allowed to do a bris milah because he himself has a milah. A woman does not physically have a milah. Is she allowed to do a bris milah? And the Gemara discusses it over there. And the Gemara brings what about the story with Tzipora, where it says that she cut off the orla. And the Gemara explains that one way of learning is not that she did it herself, but rather that she told somebody else to do it. Somebody else, whether one of their servants, whether maybe Moshe. And then the Gemara brings another possibility. Maybe she began the milah and Moshe finished it. So now that Maharsha says, Reb Shimon Gamliel is following that opinion. She started it. So now Moshe sees that she herself doesn't want to go along with what her father had said. Her father had said that this baby should not be mauled. And she, on the other hand, is going against that and going and starting it. So therefore, he could complete the job. So now Reb Shimon Gamliel can be following that opinion. And therefore, he's saying it's not that Moshe, now further in the Gemara, we're going to say now a different opinion that Moshe was being swallowed up by a malach. According to that opinion, the reason why Tzipora began the bris is because Moshe wasn't available. He's being attacked by a malach. But according to Reb Shimon Gamliel here, that Moshe was never attacked in the first place, that means the baby was being attacked. Then the reason why, according to that, why we would say that Tzipora began the bris was to demonstrate that she disagrees with her father on this, and she wants the baby to have a bris, and she wants him to be raised to begin with as a yid. And then Moshe, seeing that she wants that, then he continued the job.
Especially seeing that he's being assigned from Hashem, that
you see, right.
Bigger hole.
Right. So the Gemara continues, Dorosh of Yehuda bar Bizna, Bishosh and Israshal Moshe Rabbeinu min Amila, when Moshe was careless with Mila, and obviously Rabbi Yehuda bar Bizna is not following Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion. He's obviously following one of the other two opinions, that Moshe was the one who was careless about it, that he was the one, he should have done the Bris Mila, and he didn't. So what happened was, Bo Af V'chema Uvlo'u, two malachim called Af and Chema, which means anger and rage, came uvla'uhu, and they swallowed him up. The only part of him that they left unswallowed was his feet. Now, the Ran explains, when we say the word feet over here, we don't mean his feet as in what you put shoes on. We mean the area of the bris milah. in the Hapsukim here and there in Tanakh, where that area euphemistically is called Raglav, because you don't want to actually say the place of the Erva or something like that. So you use the word Raglav, but we're meant to understand what it means. So in other words, one of them swallowed him up from one end, the other from the other end. And therefore, it actually mentions that on the Pasuk. And therefore, Miyad Vatikach Tziporat Tzur. So therefore, Tziporah immediately grasped what's going on, and she took a sharp rock. Tzur actually can mean a shigabrach. Tzur can actually mean a rock, or it can mean a short blade, whatever, some kind of short thing. Vatichre says Orlas Buna, and she cut off the Orla of her son. And Miyad Vayirach Mimenu. At that point, the Malachim left Moshe alone. Because now she had accomplished the bris. Now they have no more reason. Now they have no more reason to attack him. So Marsha brings, again, continuing looking at that Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that the Gemara brings up the possibility over there that she didn't do the entire bris milah. She only began it, but Moshe completed it, because according to the Manda Omer, that women are not supposed to do a bris milah. And by the way, both opinions are brought in Shulchan Aruch. It says, a woman should not be mal, should not do a bris milah, because to respect the opinions of Rishonim based on that Gemara that say that in the end, the halacha is not. In emergency situations, though, and there have been such cases in Jewish history, that women have done brisim, as we know in concentration camps and other examples like that. There's a famous story that Blozhev Rebbe told, where he sees that he saw in a concentration camp where a woman is looking around for a knife, and the Rebbe figures she probably wants to commit suicide, and he's trying to talk her out of it, and she says, no, I need a knife. She says, a Nazi officer over there, she demands his knife from him. He also thinks, good, she's probably going to commit suicide, I'll have the pleasure of watching. Then she reaches down, there's a bundle by her feet, she opens it up, and there's a baby, and she does a bris milah right there on the baby.
And the officer didn't see?
The officer saw. He saw, but by that time, she already had the knife. She did it very quickly.
Oh, no,
he didn't know there was a baby. No, she had kept the baby concealed for that entire, for the few days since it was born. So she did a bris milah right there. And she said, Blozhev Rebbe says all this. He says he saw this happen. That she says, Hashem, you've given me a healthy baby, and I'm going to return him to you as a kosher to you. So an emergency situation like that, on Pialocha, we say a woman can do a bris milah. But ordinarily, we say that not, because there are opinions that say that not. So anyway, so the Marsha says, again, when we say over here, Vatichres is Orlas Bna, again, it doesn't necessarily mean she cut it off completely. She started the process and Moshe finished it. But Vataga, when it says Vataga Laraglov, when it says she touched it, means that she only touched the Orla with the tsur, with the sharp blade. And then she touched it Laraglov because of Raglov, because she saw that her husband Moshe had been swallowed up by these Malachim. And she realized that the fact that only his Mila is left unswallowed shows that therefore they can't even harm him in that part of his body because of the kedusha of the mitzvah of milah. So that made her realize the greatness of the mitzvah of milah, that she needs to start the job. And then once the malachim left him alone, then Moshe can finish the job. So the Gemara continues. Now Moshe thought to kill those malachim. We actually find a pasuk that mentions those two malachim. Heref me'af va'azoyv chema. Let go of af and abandon Chema, it's a pasuk in Tehillim, in Kapitel Lamed Zayin. So we're doubting that Hashem is telling Moshe, leave Af alone and let go of Chema, don't kill them. Now, why should Moshe be wanting to kill these Malachim? So Marsha says, because Moshe was not aware that Hashem had sent these Malachim. He thought that these Malachim came on their own to attack him. Well, Habola Hogo HaHashkim Mahogri. So he figured, they're coming to attack me, then I need to kill them. Whatever, they're not shadim, they're malachim. They're malachim. Regular malachim can come in the middle of the day as well. So he figured that they just came to attack just on their own without. So therefore, so Hashem tells him, no, heref me'af ba'azoyv chema. And Marsha says, look at the second half of the pasuk and tell him, al tischar ach lahorea, which means don't be provoked to act badly. Meaning Hashem is telling him, you know why? They came at my command because you were acting badly by being careless and not making a bris milah for your son. So don't think they came on their own and you have any power over them. Adarabba, they came with my shlichus. Only because your wife Tzipora realized what's going on and started the process of bris milah, only therefore are you safe now. Well, I mean, can you have a malach without Hashem's shlichus? It's a good question. I mean, you do find, for example, it says by the malachim who went to destroy Sodom, that they said that we are destroying the city, and for that they were kicked out of Shemayim for well over 100 years. There's actually, you know, we're in connection with this coming week's parasha. We're now heading into parashas Vayetze with the malachim going up and down the ladder. The Medrash says one thing is these why the malachim olim miyodim, why are they going up and then going down? Don't malachim store it out in Shemayim? So one explanation the Medrash says is these are the malachim who had been kicked out of Shemayim over 100 years earlier after the matter of Sodom. Now finally Yaakov is seeing in his dream where now they're being readmitted to Shemayim. Therefore the olim and only then yodim.
But also good that it says that these were the malachim from Kutzlars.
Yeah, there's many different explanations why, of course. The Rashi mentions that the malachim of Kutzlars. There's a lot of different explanations. Yeah, but anyway. So the point is, so Moshe could have thought, says Marusha, that these malachim were coming on their own without Hashem specifically sending them, and Hashem is telling them, no, it's not. And Hashem is telling him, no, it's not so. And the Gemara continues, v'yesh oimim l'chema horgoi. Some say that actually Moshe was successful in killing one of these two malachim, namely Chema. Shenema, Chema eimli, as you find a pasuk in Yeshaya, Hashem says, I have no Chema. I have no fierce anger. Implying why? Because Hashem previously had that, and now it's gone. With that said, though, So the Gemara asks, "Ksivki yagoti mipnei afba achema." Don't you have Moshe Rabbeinu himself says in Parshas Ekev after he's describing the aftermath of the Chetah Egel? He says that was afraid of the af and the chema. So don't we see that both af and chema still existed at that point? And this is many years after, not many years. This is a year and a half, whatever, after the story with the Mila. The answer is trei chema abu. The answer is you can answer that there are two malachim of Hashem called chema. So Moshe was able to kill one of them, but there's still the other. The other answer you could say is that Moshe wasn't afraid of Chema himself, he's gone, but rather of the retinue, Chayo Shochema, the Ran translates. Gunda means the retinue of soldiers that go together with Chema, they were still there. So Chema himself may be gone, but the lesser Malachim who serve under Chema, who are Hashem's Shluchim under Chema, they still exist. And therefore Moshe was afraid of them harming the Jewish people after the Chetah Egel. Marsha explains the deeper idea about it is that there's two layers when it comes to the Mila. You have the Orla, and then you have the thin membrane under it that's split open doing with Priya. So now why are these two Malachim Af and Chema attacking him? Because there were the two levels of the Bris Mila that he hadn't done. So now Moshe wanted to accomplish the Bris Mila. He wants to kill both of them. Hashem says that no, the only way you're going to be able to kill such koichas atoma is in fact al tischarach lahoreya. If a person is careful in the future not to do averus, then they will be able to kill such malachim. So according to the one opinion, then he wasn't able to at all, because Hashem is telling him the only way a person in the future can do that is actually by avoiding averus. The other opinion is that he killed Chema, namely because again Moshe didn't start the Bris Mila, but he finished it. Therefore, he was able to remove one level of the Orla, and therefore he was able to kill one Malach. Had he done both, had it not been that Tzipora had to take the initiative, then in fact he might have been able to kill both. But like this, he was only able to kill one. But nevertheless, you still have the surrounding Koichas Atumah. The Gemara is saying
they only came because
there's different other places, by the way, in Shas where it mentions this Malach Chema, and there's a couple of other places where Tosfos asks, in fact, that based on our Gemara, it seems that Chema was gone. So first of all, the Gemara itself is saying there are two kinds of Chema, so that can explain, and you have the lesser soldiers of Chema, so to speak, so that can explain how in other places the Gemara can be referring to Chema as still existing even hundreds of years later and in the time of Yechezkel and so forth. The Gemara does also mention in Avodah Zarah, though, that Chema still exists, but Hashem uses it only against the Goyim, not against the Jewish people. When it comes to the Jewish people, is what you have, the pasuk over here, the Gemara is quoting Chema Ein Li. Hashem says, I have no Chema, I have no burning anger against the Jewish people. Other levels of anger Hashem can have when we don't behave the way we should, but not Chema, because we're saying over here that Moshe was able to get rid of that.
So that
darga of Chema. So that level of Chema he got rid of.
Because Malach is spiritual, so you can't kill a Malach.
No, but it means, in other words, that he was Mevatel, the Koyach that Malach represents.
Is it a general name for Malach?
Chema is unlimited anger. What is
one second, one second, one second. Here the Gemara is saying there were two kinds of chema. So yeah, I mean, b'chlal, you have, you know, in general, you have the idea that the malachim don't have permanent names, right? Their name depends on what job they're given. So I guess you could say what the Gemara means over here, trei chema hava, means there's two different levels of chema. One of them was killed in the sense that now that one, at least as far as the Jewish people, no longer exists to be embodied in a malach. The other one still exists, the Gemara is saying. What were you going to say?
No, what is chema? You didn't define chema exactly.
Chema literally means burning anger. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So how can you say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu killed that burning anger when we know that it's not the case?
Well, so that's what the Gemara is saying. There's two different levels of it. So, or there's the original one, and then there's the Gunda, there's the soldiers, the lesser Malachim, that still represents some aspect of it. So Moshe was able, according to this opinion, to kill one of those, but you still have the rest of it.
What's the difference between the Gemara and Avodah Zarah
that says that there is a difference in that regard between the Jews and the Goyim, where the Jewish people, Hashem doesn't use Chema against us, just other forms of anger. Okay, let's go. Tanya, Rebbe Megdola Mila. Rebbe says another way that we see how great Mila is. You see that there was no person who was so involved in doing mitzvahs or a different girsa. It says on the side, Tzadik Gomer Ba'olam. There was no greater tzadik in the world, Kavram Avinu, as Avram. V'lanikra Tomim El Al Shem Mila. And yet, when is he first called complete? Only when he has a bris mila. Shenema his halach lefanai. There ye summim, as Hashem tells him, walk before me and be perfect. And I will place my bris between me and you, implying that up until bris is accomplished, even Avraham, the tremendous tzaddik, is not considered tomim, is not considered whole. Dovracha, another explanation. Which Marsha mentions in this case, Marsha quotes something from the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim that explains that. But what's the idea of bris milah? I mean, a person is created with an orla. So what's the point of removing the orla? The idea is it's not that there's something lacking in the way Hashem created the world. It's not that you say that chas v'shalom Hashem created the world incomplete, that there's something wrong with it, and we have to fix it up. What it is what?
Excellent.
So, right, but why did Hashem create it? The reason is because being an orla represents having a certain lacking in midos. So when a person removes the physical orla, then along with it goes that it means that now their midas are being improved. So now we're saying that Avraham had all the greatest midas, but nevertheless, he's still not called complete in them until he had the milah, which then that completed the perfection of his midas. So Dover Acha, another explanation, Gdola Mila, Sheshkula Kineged Kala Mitzvah Shabbat Torah. Mila is so great, it's equal to all the other mitzvahs in the Torah, Shenema, Kia, Pia, Vorma, Eva, Vagoma, because Hashem says to Moshe, through all of these words of the Torah, I have made with you a bris. So bris, referring to bris mila, so we see that the bris of mila is equal to all the other mitzvahs in the Torah. There is, in fact, a rem, as they say on that, the word bris itself is equal 612, tough ratio yud beis. So therefore, it means you have the one mitzvah of milah, and you have the other 612, and they're both equal. The difference is that so we say that the Rambam stresses a point in his Pirush HaMishnah Sancholin that we don't keep any, there's no mitzvah that we keep nowadays because it was given before Matan Torah. Every mitzvah that we keep nowadays is because Hashem regave that mitzvah at Matan Torah. So even though, yes, we call it Bris Shel Avraham Avinu, and we mention the S'chus of Avraham at a Bris Mila and so forth, we shouldn't think we're doing it because it was given to Avraham. Fundamentally, we're doing it because Hashem regave it at Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu was going to punish because at that point there was still Bnei Noach. A davar acha gdola mila, another explanation. Mila is so great. She umole mila than iskai mushamayim ba'aretz. If it weren't for the schos of bris mila, the heaven and earth wouldn't continue to exist. Shenem im loy brisi yom v'layla v'gomer. As the pasuk says, if it weren't, as we learned this in the Mishnah, if it weren't for my covenant by day and by night, which means the bris mila, which is the only mitzvah that a person has with him 24/7. However, the Gemara says, "Pliga de Rabbi Eliezer." However, that explanation disagrees with Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lazar, it says on the side. De Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Gdola Torah, He says, no, that pasuk is not referring to Bris Milah, it's referring to Torah. She umole Torah on his sky of Shemayim Baruch. If it weren't for Torah, the heaven and earth wouldn't continue to exist. Shenemi, Mloy Bris Yemer Laila, the same pasuk, the word from my covenant by day and by night, focus Shemayim Baruch by some David Gomer. Hashem says, I wouldn't have set up the laws of heaven and earth, and that implies Torah, because Torah is Vargisa by Yemer Laila. You have to be learning Torah day and night, and therefore Torah is what's referred to in this pasuk rather than Bris Milah. When it comes to Agadta, you know, all the different opinions can be correct. So we can say it refers to both Torah and Bris Milah. Marsha, by the way, makes an interesting point. So how come Bris Milah is not listed in Pirkei Avos among the things that the Al Shloshet Dvarim Olam Kayim, it says at the end of the first parak of Pirkei Avos, Al Adin Vala Emes Vala Shalom, based on this, then Milah ought to be included as well, or Torah ought to be included according to the other opinion. The answer is, Marsha says, because there we're talking about things being Adam Al-Khabera. Here we're saying things being Adam Al-Makar. Next, the Gemara continues. No, because they were saying in the Mishnah, we said that even though the Goyim, there may be Goyim who physically do Bris Milah, they're still considered Arelim, they're still considered Api Halacha, they're considered uncircumcised. Even by the way, I mean, the Rambam mentions in Pilchus Malachim, that based on a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that Bnei Keturah are Chayiv and Bris Milah, because they were born to Avram after he had his Bris. There's Macholikas, we're showing him whether it means only the original Bnei Keturah, only the six sons who were born to Avraham, or does it mean their descendants as well? The Rambam holds that it means their descendants as well. But nevertheless, so to a certain, they have a mitzvah of Milah, but it's not a full mitzvah like we Jews have.
It's Arabs.
Yeah, like Arabs. Yeah. Okay, the Gemara says, Omer of Yehuda Omer Rab. When Hashem told Avraham, walk before me and be perfect, achazate ge'odah. Avraham was seized by trembling. He started shaking with fear. Does it mean there's something wrong with me? Some Arshar explains, in other words, again, based on what we were saying before, that Bris Milah has to do with Midos. So Avraham thought, when Hashem is telling him, Ve'yesamim, means up till now, you have not perfected your Midos. So he's very nervous. What am I missing? What of my Midos have I not worked on yet? But then when Hashem told him, I will make my bris between me and you, meaning that you lack bris milah, then he calmed down and he realized it's not that Hashem has anything against me, that I did something wrong, it's just that I haven't yet done bris milah, which, like we said, represents perfection of a person's midos, so that I'm still lacking. So that's that Hashem is telling me now for the first time.
But he didn't do for some.
No, here we're talking about for himself. He himself had not yet had a Bris Milah at that point at 99. When Hashem tells him that, Avram, we're talking about him. Yeah. Next, since we're talking about that, so now the Gemara digresses a little bit to talk about another aspect of Avraham's Tmimus, namely that Avraham thought that he is controlled by Mazolos, like everybody in the world is, and Hashem is informing him that not, you're beyond that. So the Gemara says, the pasuk says, "Vayotze Oseh Achotza." Earlier, before the Bris Ben Absarim, Hashem took Avraham outdoors. So what does that mean? You have in the psukim before that, Avraham, Hashem tells him, "Schorcha Harim Me'od." You're going to have tremendous reward. He says, "What are you going to give me? I'm childless. The domestic Eliezer is going to inherit me." And Hashem tells him, "No, you're going to have children." And the pasuk says, "Vayotze Oseh Achotza." Hashem took him outdoors. So what's going on? Omel Afanim. It means that Avraham said to Hashem, "Ribbono Shel Olam, Hastakalti B'Mazel Sheli." I've looked into my mazel, the ainli ala bain echad. I'm destined to only have one son. And in other words, he figures he's only going to have Yishmael. Or different gear says, the ainli rori laholid, a different gear says, I'm not even fated to have children at all. Omaloi, so Hashem tells him, Tsemi stagminus shalach, go out of your stargazing, ain mazel Yisrael. The Jewish people are not controlled by mazel. And that's what it means by yotze oisu. He took him out from beyond being controlled by the mazolos. Marsha explains over here actually that the different Gersois over here reflect there are actually two different times that Hashem told him this. The first time was before the Bris Ben Absarim. At that point, he didn't have any children yet. So Hashem told him, the Gemara explains in Shabbos that Avraham said, looking at it with astrology, I realize my mazel is Tzedek, which is the planet Jupiter, and that planet is positioned in such a way that it shows astrologically that I'm not destined to have children. So Hashem told him, I control the world. I will move Tzedek to a different position so you'll see that you will be able to. That's Vayotze Oseh Achotza. Now, though, later on, so Avraham has a son, Yishmael, but he figures, okay, B'derech HaTeva, that's it. At most, I'm fated to have only the one. So now Hashem tells him later on, when he renames him Avraham in connection with Bris Milah, and Marashah says that's also the connection with our Gemara over here, when Hashem renamed him Avraham, he was telling him further, you're not controlled by Mazel at all. Unlike before, I had to change the position of the mazel in order to make you be able to have one child. Now, I don't even have to change anything. You're not even controlled by mazel at all. You have a new name, Avraham, and now you will have a son, Yitzchak, and my bris will be with me, and my bris will be with you and with him. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Omer Yitzchak, kol masmim atzmai, a person who makes himself complete, HaKadosh Baruch Hu masmim imai, then Hashem acts with him in a perfect way. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, im chosid dischasa, the Pasuk says, with the chosid, you Hashem act as a chosid, im gvar tomim titamim, with a mighty, with a person who is tomim, who is complete, titamim, you act perfectly. Meaning, in other words, if a person has tmimus and he trusts in Hashem, then Hashem repays that trust and makes it that his bitachon in Hashem will be completely fulfilled.
What's the chosid mean?
His chassid means you will act as a chassid. When a person goes lefnim mishuras adin with Hashem, then Hashem goes lefnim mishuras adin with him. And now, when a person acts tomim, in other words, for example, Rashi mentions on the pasuk tomim tiyeh Hashem alakecha, Rashi explains the previous psukim are talking about various kinds of magic and various kinds of methods of foretelling the future that the goyim would use, and the Torah is telling us that those are off limits for us. So the Torah is saying tomim tiyeh im Hashem alakecha, be tomim with Hashem. Rashi says on the pasuk over there, don't go start trying to delve into the future and trying to know what the future is going to be. Accept whatever Hashem is going to give you is right for you. So that means that Hashem reciprocates and taka acts with the person that bears out that tmimus that the person has. It could be talking about Klape Adam also. Yeah, but Yaakov says it to Lavan, but that's a different thing. Let's talk about that another time. It's part of those psukim, fine, but that's a different thing. Yeah. Okay, anyway. Omer Rav Hoshea, in this connection, Rav Hoshea says, kol ha-masmim atzmi, when a person acts in a way that is tomim, when a person acts in a way that's complete before with Hashem, shah emedeslai, the hour will stand him in good stead. In other words, the Ran says, sha'olam l'gdula, he will end up achieving greatness. Shenema is halach l'fanei ve'yei tomim. Hashem tells Avraham, walk before me and be tomim. Uchtiv v'yisalav ha'mon goyim. And then Hashem tells him, you will become the father of a multitude of nations. So we see, because he became tomim, because he worked to become tomim in Hashem's presence, therefore Hashem brought him to this greatness. And Marashah explains, this is the point, in other words, that Avraham trusted Hashem. He's no longer paying attention to astrology and to any of that kind of thing. Therefore, Hashem changed his mazel for him, and Ashah Medesloy, so Hashem changed his mazel for good and showed that Hashem controls all of this. So you won't just have Yishmael, you'll have Yitzchak as well, and he will be the father of the nation that I will have my bris with. They don't really mean anything now. You see that Avraham Avinu himself sent him away. You were going to say something?
How could Avram have believed in mazel after he realized that Hashem was controlling the world?
Because actually he thought that possible? One second, because the fact is, the Gemara has a long discussion about it in Shabbos. There is even an opinion over there that says, Yesh mazel Yisrael. And the Gemara in other places seems to say that as well. The point is, in other words, Hashem works through the mazalos, would be the idea. In other words, that Hashem uses the mazalos as his tools to send down Shefa to each person according to how they're supposed to get it. So Hashem is the one who determines who gets what, but the mazalos are the channels through which Hashem sends it. Now Hashem is informing Avraham that, according to this opinion, Ein Mazal Yisrael, that the Jewish people are beyond that. They get their Ashpah directly from Hashem. But it's not that Avraham was completely wrong until that point. The fact is the Umas Sa'olam do get through the Mazalos. And even the Jewish people, the Gemara mentions they're in Shabbos, the Jewish people are influenced by Mazal, but not bound by it. You have various stories that the Gemara tells over there where we see that where stargazers foretold. You have a story with Akiva's daughter, you have a story with the people who were going out to cut reeds over there, where you have various things where we see their mazel was that such and such would happen, but because of a mitzvah that they did, then therefore Hashem overrode that mazel. So we're saying the same thing over here. In this connection, the Gemara says,
even after Matan Torah, we Hashem makes us believe that it his influence is through the mazalos. I mean, it sounds
again,
so.
The fact is, there is such an opinion in the Gemara and Shabbos that Yesh Mazal Yisrael. So that's the Rishonim explain that the answer is yes, Hashem does send us his Ashpa through the Mazalos, but because we are Jews and we have that special connection with Hashem, therefore we can override it. Hashem at any time can override that normal way of work of sending us influence through the Mazalos and send us influence that bypasses the Mazalos, like in those stories in the Gemara and Shabbos.
So it depends on us, basically. You're saying.
Pretty much. Yeah. Okay, the Gemara goes on. Omar Rebbe. Rebbe says, or on the side here, it says it should be Rav Levi. Kol ha-menachesh loy nachesh. When a person is menachesh, when a person tries to foretell the future using nichush, loy nachesh, then in fact, nichush will have an effect on him and he'll get easily harmed by anything which is unlucky. The Ran refers to, for example, a Gemara in Psachim that talks about, for example, it talks about a whole thing over there. You're not supposed to drink zugos. You're not supposed to eat and drink in pairs because it makes a person exposed to the influence of shading. However, the Gemara says over there that if a person is not machped on it, then the shading won't be machped on him either. But if a person is generally machped on it, and then one time he gets careless, then the shading will attack him. So our Gemara is saying essentially the same thing. If a person is always menachesh, if a person is always looking for the lucky and the unlucky things to do, then loy nachash, then the result is going to be that if one time he slips up, then the unlucky things will get him. Then the shading or whatever it is will get him. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, ki loy nachash b'yakov. As the pasuk says, for there is to him nachash in Yaakov. So the Gemara is assuming, in other words, that the word loy is like the word loy with an aleph. The Gemara is assuming over here that it's like the word loy with a vav, which means ki loy nachash. There is to him nachash b'yakov among the Jewish people. Namely, when would that be? When they follow nachashim. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Behold, lamed aleph k'siv. The pasuk clearly says it with a lamed and aleph. So there's no way. Now, sometimes you have in Tanakh, sometimes you have a kriyuk siv, where it says loy with an aleph, and we read it loy with a vav, or sometimes you even have it's written out in full, lamed vav aleph, and we doushin as though it was both. Here it's not. It clearly says lamed aleph, and there's no kriyuk siv. So how could you possibly think to understand the pasuk that it means that Yaakov has nachash in him? Ella, so no, the Gemara says, you're right, we're not learning from the pasuk, but rather, mishum midah keneged midah. No, but it's a matter of midah keneged midah. If a person always acts like he has to know the future and he has to be guaranteed of it and he has to do nechoshim to prevent it, then therefore, so he ends up being attacked by those very same nechoshim. Marsha says that still what the Gemara is doing is, it still is using the lamed aleph. Bilam is saying, remember, these are part of Bilam's brachas to the Jewish people. He's saying, I was trying the choshim. I was trying all kinds of superstitious and magical and whatever methods to be able to find the best time to curse the Jewish people. I realize it's not working. Why not? Because kiloy nachash b'yakov, because the Jewish people don't use such methods themselves, therefore my methods of nechoshim are ineffective against them. Implying, though, that if it were the other way around, if the Jewish people were using the nechoshim, then he would be effective in his. So therefore, so we are after all using the pasuk, says Marsha.
I'm just saying he's not trying to be a
but... Well, that's the point. In other words, it's the opposite of being Tommy. So the Gemara continues, Toni Ava Breda Rav Zeira, Ava, the son of Rav Zeira, taught a Braisa in this connection, Kol Odom She'ina Menachash, a person who is not Menachash, who trusts in Hashem and doesn't need to go and try to foretell the future, Machnisin Oisib, B'mechitze Sha'afil Malachi Asharis En Yichol Likoris B'seitha. He will be brought into a level of closeness to Hashem, into a chamber with Hashem that even the Malachi Asharis are not able to go into. Shenema, the same pasuk from Bilam's brachas, kila nachash b'yakov v'lekesim b'yisrael v'gemer. There's no nachash, there's no superstition among the Jewish people, there's no magic among Yisrael, and the pasuk continues, ka'esya omer the Yaakov v'yisrael ma'pol keil. At a time like that, there will be asked to Yisrael and to Yaakov, what has Hashem done? In other words, the Ran says, in other words, that the Jewish people will be at such a level of closeness to Hashem that even the Malachim are not able to get in there. So like when they want to know what Hashem is talking about, what Hashem is deciding, they're going to have to ask the Jewish people because the Jewish people are in that level where even the Malachim are not allowed to enter. And he says, this is also a midah keneged midah. The person does not look for nechoshim. He doesn't look for superstitious ways to know the future. He trusts in Hashem. Therefore, Hashem reveals to him secrets that even the Malachi Asharis don't know. One of the Mephoshim on the Ein Yaakov said another point as well, that it's midah keneged midah in another way as well. The person is showing, I'm not controlled by mazolos. I don't need to ask the mazolos. I don't need to find out what the mazolos foretell about my future. Therefore, he's not put under the control of Malachim, and he's close with Hashem himself, and even the Malachim are lower than him. Okay, getting back to Avraham Avinu. Amar Abba Bohu, Amar Abba Lazar. Mipnei ma nenash Avraham Avinu. Why was Avraham punished? V'nishtab b'bon of the Mitzrayim masayim v'eser shanim. That his children were sent into slavery for 210 years. So now, what's the connection with this in the previous Gemara? Before we were saying that Avraham trusted implicitly in Hashem, but there was one time the Gemara is going to say when Avraham lacked a little bit of trust in Hashem, namely by the when he says "Bamo Eda," he says, "How will I know that my children will inherit?" That's what the Gemara is going to say. So the Gemara is going to bring a few reasons. One of them is Mesha Osa and Gauya B'Tamid Chachamim. One reason is because he forced Tamid Chachamim into forced labor. And Gauya is a Greek or a Latin word that means forced labor. When there was the war against the four kings, he had to save Lloyd and the people of Sodom. So he gathered up Vayorek, the Gemara is going to explain in a second what the word Vayorek means. The people that he had educated, Yelide Beisa, the ones who were born in his house. The point is, they were learning Torah. So now he's Chanicha means he had educated them in Torah. So now he's all of a sudden, he's arming them and sending them off to war. So therefore he was punished eventually. The Jewish people were sent into 210 years in Mitzrayim.
There was no Torah for them to learn.
Of course there was Torah for them to learn. We know that Avraham Avinu kept the whole Torah before it was given. He taught it to them in particular. For example, there's a Gemara. For example, Avraham had spent, the Gemara is going to say soon that Avraham discovered Hashem at age 3, and eventually he started teaching everybody. As a nefesh, also b'charon, he's teaching them about Hashem, he's teaching them about Torah, he's teaching them, So, in fact, there's Gemara in Avodah Zarah that says that Avraham wrote a sefer of 400 chapters just on the halachas of Avodah Zarah, of what to do and how to stay away from Avodah Zarah. So, yeah, he had what to teach them. So like this, though, he took him away from learning Torah in order to fight this war, and Hashem held that against him. Okay, very nice, but it's still the Gemara saying that learning Torah is more important. Shmuel says a different reason is because he spoke out too broadly against the midas of Hashem. The Ran explains hifriz means viter v'hifter. Like he treated Hashem's midas carelessly, and he was maharer. He was thinking. He was questioning Hashem's midas. Shenema b'mo eda ki irashena. He says to Hashem, Hashem, you promised me Eretz Yisrael. How will I know that I inherited it? What do you mean, how will I know? Hashem promised you, you know. So that was held against him. So actually, one of the Mephoshim on Ein Yaakov explains, with both of them, the question is more why it was his children. Avraham Avinu himself didn't go down to Mitzrayim, his children did. So the first answer is because a person's Talmidim are considered like his children. So he sent his children off to war, therefore, Midi Keneged Midi, his children were sent to Mitzrayim. According to the second explanation, the vote is, Avraham is saying, I know I have enough schosim to inherit Eretz Yisrael. How do I know my children will have enough schosim? So because of that, therefore, his children were sent to Mitzrayim. Now, the Rosh points out that actually, what do you mean? Why does the Gemara even need to bring different opinions? We have right there in the Pasuk that it says, B'mo Eda. So why is the Gemara even asking why and having to give a different reason because he sent off his Talmidim to war? Wouldn't it be clearly B'mo Eda? So the Ran explains the question would be, what is it that he did wrong before that caused him to trip up and say B'mo Eda, where then Hashem has to tell him there's going to be a golos as a result of that? In other words, Avraham on his own wouldn't have said B'mo Eda if it hadn't been something else earlier that he did that was not quite what he should have done in order to that brought him to that. Now in Marasha, in the middle of Marasha, actually, there's a parenthetical note from one of the Goyim in the generation after Marasha, Reb Shmuel Kaidanover, who wrote a Pirush on Zvachim called Birkas HaZevach, and he wrote some other important Svarim. Anyway, so he asked the question that the elsewhere there's a Tosfos that explains that when Avraham said B'mo Eda, and the whole story with the Bris Ben Absorim was even before the war with the kings. So what do you mean the war with the kings led him to say B'mo Eda? It's the other way around. So he leaves it as a tzorich even. So different Achronim talk about that the possibility, first of all, not everybody agrees on that. There is, in fact, an opinion that Bris Ben Absorim was later on. So in that case, then it is chronological. Or the other possibility is that we see in the story with the war with the four kings that Avraham sent off his Talmidim to fight. We should understand from that that was a practice of Avraham's before that. Previous times also, he had made his Talmidim do work when he should have had them learning Torah exclusively. So now we have one example of it that's shown by the war with the king, but he had been doing that before as well. And therefore, according to what the Rosh is saying, that caused him now to trip up and say Bamo Eda, which in turn led to the fact that there has to be a Golus Mitzrayim. The Gemara continues, but Rabbi Yochanan Amar Shehifresh Bnei Adam Beli Konis Tachas Kanfei Hashchina. Rabbi Yochanan gives a third answer. He prevented people from entering under the wings of the Shechina. Shenema, at the end of that war, the king of Sodom says to Abraham, Ten li anefesh v'rechush kachloch, give me back the people and keep the wealth for yourself. And Abraham turns it all down. Now, the wealth, fine, he says, I don't want you to think you made Abraham rich, but why didn't he take the people with him? He should have taken the people with him and joined them to his household and started teaching them about Yiddishkeit as well. So the fact that he didn't, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that was held against Abraham. Going on with more about that war, the pasuk is Vayorek is Chanicha Yilidei Beisai. So what does that word Vayorek mean? Rav Amashahu Rikon Batorah. Rav says it means that he Hoirikon with Torah. So the Ran gives two explanations. One is Hoirikon means that he encouraged them with Torah, he strengthened them with learning Torah. The other explanation is, on the contrary, Hoirikon means he emptied them out of Torah, because we just said he took them away from Torah to fight a war. As important as the war was, the Gemara was just saying he shouldn't have done that. So therefore, like, he emptied them out of the Torah that they had learned until that point. So that's one meaning of Vayorek. The Mefarish over here, printed under Rashi's name, says a different explanation. How he says, how does Horikon Batorah mean that he? So the Ran says it means Zerzan, that he encouraged them with Torah. The Mefarish says rather what it means is the word Horik means like to empty out from one container into another. Avram poured everything that he had into them, so therefore he made them like containers that are full of Torah. Anyway, that's one meaning of Ayorik. Ushmulam Shahurikan Bazal. Shmuel says a different explanation. He horikon them by giving them gold. The Ran and the Mefarish both explain that the word horikon then, according to that, or vayorek, is related to the word yorek, which is a word. It's a word for a color. Tosfos in some other places explains that yorek can mean a number of different colors. One of them being yellow. Gold is yellow. It can mean green, it can mean yellow. There's a Tosfos in Sukkah that says that even sometimes it can mean a bluish color. Whatever the case, here the Gemara is using it in the sense of yellow. Gold is yellow. So it implies Horikon Bazahav. And in fact, you have Psukim, you have both the Ran and the Mefarish bring over here a Pasuk, Birakrak Chorutz, which refers to yellow gold, a Pasuk and Tilim. So it means, in other words, that Vayorek, he gave them yellow gold in order that they should come and fight. Now, why does he have to give them gold? What, they're not going to come and fight if he doesn't bribe them? So the Rosh says, okay, he gave them gold in order that they should be willing to go, like they shouldn't have to feel like they're forced into it. Tosfos elsewhere explains, based on a Medrash, that what it was is he gave them lots of gold, so that way when they see all the spoils of Sodom, they're likely to go and try to grab some, and that's going to slow them down from chasing after the kings. He wants them to chase after the kings and defeat them as fast as possible in order to save Lot and all the people of the cities. So therefore, he gave them lots of gold ahead of time. This way, they'll figure, we have lots of gold. We have more than we know what to do with anyway. We don't need to go and start grabbing from the spoils of Sodom. Let's go chase after the kings right away.
But the context of that
passage
is talking about
one. Yes, previously it encouraged them with Torah. Or that's the thing. The Ran says the second explanation, that now he did wrong by emptying them of the Torah that they had by him. The pasuk says Shmoina also shlosh meis, that he had with him 318 men. Amar of Ami ba'aba Eliezer k'neged kolam. Eliezer was equal in strength to all of them. Ikadami Eliezer who, and the other opinion is that the 318 was Eliezer. He didn't take along 318 men. It means he took along only Eliezer, because the gematria of Eliezer's name is 318, so he took along only himself and Eliezer was the equivalent of 318. I once saw, actually, somebody said, maybe to reconcile the two opinions, maybe what it was is Avraham is asking for volunteers, and Eliezer was the first one to volunteer, and then other people followed him and volunteered as well. So therefore, in a certain sense, you can say Eliezer was the first one, because if it hadn't been for him, nobody else would have. Since the Gemara is mentioning something that Ami Ba'aba said, so the Gemara mentions a few other things from him having to do with Avraham Avinu also. Ben Gimel Shonim Hikar Avraham as Borei. Avraham was 3 years old when he first recognized Hashem. Shenema, as we have in this past week's parasha, Ekev Asher Shama Avraham B'Kodi. Hashem tells Yitzchak, Ekev, that Avraham listened to my voice. and Chushbonim may have shivan a train. The word Akev is gematria 172, so it means that for 172 years, Abraham was listening to Hashem's voice. So he discovered Hashem at age 3, and then another 172 years till he passed away. Now, you have the famous thing, you have the Rambam brings that Abraham recognized Hashem at the age of 40. There's a Medrash that says at the age of 48. So in fact, you know, the explanation is that he recognized Hashem in different stages. He started at 3 years old, and then he fully understood Hashem. He fully understood more about Hashem by the time he was 40, and then even more by the time he was 48. An interesting sikha, actually, where the Rebbe talks about that, based on a medrash that says that Abraham was perfect from when he was born, but the Hebrew was saying that he only discovered Hashem at the age of 3, so that for the first 3 years, at least, he wasn't perfect. And in fact, the Rambam says that he was worshipping Avodah Zarah together with all the other people of Ur Kasdim until he discovered Hashem. So there's a sikha where the Rebbe explains that since in the end, Abraham took all of those experiences and used those in the course of discovering Hashem and teaching Hashem and teaching about Hashem to the world, so therefore, retroactively, that made Abderach HaKiav Tshuva, that makes Tshuva Me'ava, that makes Zdoinus into Zechuyas. So the same way over here, all his years from birth and onward can be considered perfect and complete, even though if we were to look at him when he was before 3 and even when he was after that, he was in fact Ovid Avodah Zarah and had an incomplete knowledge of Hashem. Because after all, because he redeemed all those earlier years by what he accomplished with Tshuva Me'aba in his later years. Okay, for Omar Rami Ba'aba, another thing that Rami Ba'aba or Rav Ami Ba'aba says, another thing having to do with Gematria, Hasatan b'chushbonet plus mei v'shitin v'arba. The word Hasatan is gematria 364. Now, the Maharsha explains, I mean, the name is usually Satan, but in the pasuk, in Psukim, in Tanakh, whenever he's referred to, he's always called a Hasatan. So therefore, so the hey becomes part of his name as well. That's gematria 364. So here, the Gemara doesn't explain what that signifies, but elsewhere in Yuma, the Gemara explains that what it means that the Satan has power only 364 days of the year. The last day, the other day, is Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, the Satan has no power to be mekatri.
What about Rosh Hashanah?
Rosh Hashanah, he does have the ability to be makatrid, which is why we say we blow the shofar over and over in order to confuse him. Yom Kippur, we're saying to begin with, when we need to do that, he himself is quiet on that day. There's a medrash actually where the Satan himself on Yom Kippur says he sees the Jewish people being like malachim, so like he starts praising us to Hashem instead of criticizing us because he realizes that he has no power over us on that day. Yeah. But Amar Rami Ba'aba, Rami or Rav Ami Ba'aba says another b'chalal. Whenever you have in Shas any of the Amoraim named Rami, really their name was Rav Ami. There's a letter from Rav Shuda Goin where he explains a number of names of Amoraim like that. Ravina is really Reb Avina. Raphram is really Reb Ephraim. And so forth. So a lot of names of Amoraim that begin with a resh like that are really short for Reb and their personal name. So the same thing over here, Rami is really short for Reb Ami. Anyway. V'amar Rami Ba'aba or Rav Ami Ba'aba. Here's another gematria thing. Ksiv Avram or Ksiv Avraham. First he was called Avram, then Avraham. Why the hey? Besides, the pasuk mentions Avraham and Goyim, that's it. But B'tchila him lichay HaKadosh Baruch Hu amosayim va'agoyim v'shloisha evorim. Originally, Hashem put Avraham in control of 243 of his limbs, which is gematria of the name Avram. So he's missing five that he had no control over. All of a sudden, later on, Hashem made him be able to rule over and control all 248 limbs. Elohein, what are the ones that were missing before? Shtei einayim, his two eyes, or shtei oznayim, and his two ears, v'rosh hagvia, and the tip of the male organ. So the Ran explains a person's eyes and ears are not completely under his own reshus. A person inevitably sees and hears things that he's not supposed to. And as far as the Aver, he didn't have a bris milah yet. Now Hashem made it that Avraham is able to control not only the things that are under a person's conscious control, but even he's able to control his eyes and his ears, that he shouldn't see or hear anything that he's not supposed to. And he controls his Aver now in the sense that now he has a bris milah on it. So therefore, now he's in control of all 248 limbs, which is the gematria of the name Avraham. The Rashash points out another point as well. Another way we can say, inevitably a person, for example, sees something that he shouldn't, and he has huhurim, and it has an effect on his aver. Now we're saying Hashem put him in control of his eyes and his ears, so now automatically he has control of his aver as well, but now it's not going to even have any taivas towards something that it shouldn't. Marshall mentions in this way, in this connection, by the way, that the eyes and the ears are the places of the two more ruchniistic senses. A person has five senses. Out of them, a person's sense of sight and smell, not smell, smell is more so. Smell is connected with the neshama. The Gemara is not even mentioning that. But sight and hearing are a person's more ruchniistic senses. So Avraham was already in control of his more physical senses. Now Hashem put him in control even of these more ruchniistic, even of these more ruchniistic ethereal senses, and also of the milah. And Rami Ba'aba says, here's another thing, speaking of the body and speaking of the Evarim. My dichtiv, what does it mean, a posik in Kehelas? Ir ktan of anoshim v'gomer. The posik, let's quote the psukim in full first, and then the Gemara is going to explain them phrase by phrase. Two psukim back to back in Kehelas. Ir ktana, a small city, va'anoshim v'ma'at, there are very few people in it, uvo'ele a melech gadol, a great king comes to the city, v'sobav oisa, and he besieges the city, uvo'ne ole a mitzorim gadolim, and he builds great siege works against the city. Then the pasuk continues, u'motza ba'ish miskin chacham, then you find in that city a poor wise man, u'milatu ase'ir b'chachmasei, he saves the whole city with his wisdom, v'odam le'zachar ase'isha miskin ahu, and nobody remembers afterwards that poor man. So what is going on over here, says Rami Ba'aba, and Marashar explains what's bothering Rami Ba'aba is that the pasuk is saying the king comes and surrounds the city and set up some siege works and whatever. A king doesn't do that by himself. He has an army with him. So the pasuk should say that the king comes with his army and besieges the city and so forth. Other Mephoshim explain that also what's bothering him is if it's a small city, what's the big glory in a king going and conquering a small city? Maybe it was a big city, then he gets glory out of conquering it. But if it's a little tiny city, then who cares? So therefore, the Gemara is understanding that this is a mashal for something deeper. It means irktana zadguf, the small city refers to the body of a person, which a person starts out, after all, with a very small body. When it says there are very few people in the city, this refers to a person's limbs, which start out very small and weak. When it says a great king comes and besieges it, that refers to the Yetzirah, which is in a person as soon as he's born. A person already has a Yetzirah. When it says he builds against it siege towers, really, Mitzodim b'charamim is actually a quotation from a different posik in Kehelas. Here it's supposed to the posik that we're quoting actually says Mitzodim g'dolim. Whatever, anyway, big siege works. And Mitzodim b'charamim would mean siege works and traps. Elo avonis, that refers to the avonis, that the Yetzirah tricks a person into doing. Then the pasuk continues, "Motza ba'ish miskin b'chacham." Then you find in that city a poor wise man, Zeh Yetzirah. That poor wise man refers to the Yetzirah. Why is he called poor? For one thing, because he comes in only later. Because a person is born, a person is the Rosh refers to a different pasuk in Kehelas that calls him Yelad Miskin B'chacham, a poor young boy. A poor smart boy. The Yetzirah is called a boy relative to the Yetzirah because it comes into a person only later. The Yetzirah is with a person from when he's born. The Yetzirah really only comes in when he's bar mitzvah. So therefore, the Yetzirah is younger than the Yetzirah in that sense. So ish miskin v'chacham ze yetzer tov, that refers to the yetzer tov, which is poor compared to the yetzahara. And also it's called miskin, also the Rosh adds, because the fact is many times people don't listen to the yetzer tov. People much more often listen to the, people are more naturally prone to listen to the yetzahara. So the yetzer tov is like more a poor person that nobody pays any attention to him. But the pasuk continues, umila tu se'ir b'chachmasei, he saves the city with his wisdom. That means it gets a person to do tshuva and to do maisim tovim, which in fact there's a Gemara in Brachas, we had it not long ago in Ein Yaakov, that says tachlis chachma tshuva maisim tovim. The purpose that a person has chachma is in order to do tshuva and maisim tovim. So therefore, the pasuk can be referring to that he uses his chachma to get the yetzer tov, uses his chachma to get the person to do tshuva and do maisim tovim. But the pasuk finishes the ish v'odam lezachar and so ish hamiskin ahu. When it says nobody remembers that poor man, that means the b'shas yetzahara. When a person is being seized by the yetzahara, less the midkal of the yetzatoiv, nobody remembers at a time like that the yetzatoiv because people are more prone to listen to their Yetzer Hara. So even though a person has a Yetzer Tov and he can save the whole city, the whole body with Tshuva Ma'aseh Tovim, nevertheless, unfortunately, a person often doesn't listen to him and prefers to listen to the Yetzer Hara. So that's what Shlomo is telling us in these Pesukim.
Save the whole body or save the whole world?
Save the whole body. I mean, within that, the whole world, because like the Rambam says, a person should always consider that himself and the whole world are exactly half and half. Then, since we mentioned that, so here's another pasuk that also mentions chochma. Ha chochma toiz l'chacham. Another pasuk in Kehela says ha chochma toiz l'adam. Chochma makes a person, wisdom makes a person strong. Me asora shalitim, more than ten rulers. So what does that mean? Ha chochma toiz l'chacham is a truva ma'izim tovim. Again, the chochma that we're referring to is the chochma that a person has that leads him to do truva and ma'izim tovim, and that is more effective. Me asora shalitim. That's more effective than the 10 ruling parts of the body, namely shtei enayim, the two eyes, or shtei aznayim, the two ears, or shtei yadayim, the two hands, or shtei raglayim, the two feet, v'rosh hagvia, the tip of the male organ, or peh, and the mouth. Those 10 control most of the things that a person does, and most of the things that a person does are accomplished through those 10 limbs. And tshuva, ma'aseh tovim are more powerful than all of that. They overpower those and help a person to use those 10 limbs for the right purposes. Marsha points out that, so you have like this, we've covered 4 of the 5 senses. You have sight, sight, hearing, taste, which is with the mouth, and touch. We're not mentioning smell because a person doesn't really do much with his person doesn't really accomplish anything with his sense of smell. Or you have it and it's connected with the neshama, but you don't really accomplish anything in the world with it. So therefore, we're calling those particular 10 limbs the shalitim. Like those are the ones that more than anything else that control what a person does. Okay. Getting back to Avraham Avinu, the Gemara says, "Amar Reb Zechariah Meshum Reb Yishmael, Bikesh Hakadosh Baruch Hu Lahotzi Kohuna Mishem." Hashem originally intended that the Kohuna, that the family of Kohanim should be sent from Shem, that Shem's children should be the hereditary Kohanim. Shenem Avuhu Kohen L'Kel Avin. After all, it says about Malki Tzedek, which is another name for Shem Ben Noach, that he was a Kohen to Hashem. But Kivin Shehikdim Birkas Avraham Birkas Hamakim, but because Shem gave a bracha to Avraham ahead of to Hashem, Hotzia me Avraham, instead Hashem brought the Kohanim out of Avraham instead of out of Shem. Shenema vayivorcheu vayomer, after the war with the 4 kings, it says Malkitzedek came to meet Avraham, and he said to him, he blessed him, and he said, Boruch Avraham Kael Oyen Konish Maimorot, blessed is Avraham to the highest power, the one who acquired heaven and earth, Boruch Kael Elyon, and only then does he say, and blessed is the highest power. So first he blessed Abraham, then Hashem. Omalei Avraham, Savraham, in fact, says to Shem, how can you do that? Is it right to give the bracha to the servant to me before his master, Hashem? Miyad nosnal Avraham. So right away, at that point, Hashem took the kohuna away from Shem and gave it to Avraham. Now, the obvious question is that all the Mephoshim ask, Avraham is descended from Shem. So what do you mean Hashem took it from Shem and gave it to Avraham?
And Avraham had already
Kohen
to make a brachas.
Hashem gave him the power to give brachas, but that's not the same as the power to be a Kohen. The answer is, in other words, because every Yid has the power to give brachas, but still, you only have Kohen him, or only from Shevet Levi. The answer is, so the Ran says, what it means is that he didn't get it as a result of being descended from Shem. He got it on his own merits. It was taken away from Shem, and then the one who received it was Avraham, because the Gemara is saying over here, because Avraham protested against what Shem did, but he didn't get it because he's a 9th generation descendant from Shem, but rather he got it on his own zchus. Different other Mephoshim talk about different other explanations. The Tosfos says that what it means is that like this, it should have been among other children of Shem as well. So in the end, it was taken away from all of Shem's other children and given exclusively to Avraham. The other point Tosfos says is, on the face of it, now you think of it, Avraham is not descended from Shem's Bechor. Shem's Bechor was named Elam, and Avraham's ancestor is Arpachshad, who was Shem's third son. So if it had just been, if the kahuna had been by Shem, then eventually it would have gone to Elam and then to Elam's oldest and so forth. Instead, it was taken away from Shem and given to Avraham, who's not even descended from Shem's oldest son. Shenemar, it's very interesting, actually, there's a Rashi on a Pasuk in Micha, the Pasuk in Micha, where the Navi is warning the Jewish people, if you don't do tshuva, then the goyim are going to take over Eretz Yisrael. He has an expression over there, Oid ha-yodesh ovi loch. He says, I will yet bring the heir to you. So what does that mean, the heir? Rashi mentions that they were a very interesting point. Based on what we're saying over here, if Shem's oldest son was Aaron, Arpachshad, which is the ancestor of the Jewish people, he's the eighth generation ancestor of Avraham Avinu, was Shem's third son. In the end, now, Eretz Yisrael was supposed to be Shem's portion, but by rights, Eretz Yisrael, being the best land, should afterwards go to Shem's oldest, Elam, and then to his descendants. Instead, Hashem took it away from them and gave it to Arpachshad's descendants. Now Hashem is warning the Jewish people, you don't do tshuva, Elam is going to come, because they were allies of Bavel. They're going to end up taking over Eretz Yisrael. They were allies of Bavel in the Churban Bayis Rishon. So they were going to... Elam were descended from Shem. Yeah, they lived in what's now Iran. They were allies above all. They were allies above. So Hashem is telling through the Navi that yes, the original the one who should have been the original heir, Elam, is going to come take over his possession. After all, if you don't do tshuva, yeah.
That's the Babylonians.
So the Babylonians themselves are descended from Cham. Nimrod, in particular, is a son, not from Cham. Yeah, Nimrod, Chush Yolod as Nimrod, and Chush was a son of Cham. But they had allies from different other nations, and one of the nations that was allied with them was Abram, who was descended from Shem. So the Gemara continues. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, Ne'um Hashem la'adoni, so says Hashem to my master. This is, in other words, the Ran says, David is calling Avraham my master. Hashem says to him, Shavli mini, sit by my right hand, Ad oshis oyvecha adoim la'aglacha, until I make your enemies a footstool under your feet. In other words, that I'm going to defeat your enemies and you're going to be able to step on them. Uvasre, and a few psukim later, it says in the same kapitel kufyud, Nishba Hashem v'lo yinochem, Hashem swore and he won't change his mind about it. Atachoyin la'ulam, you, meaning Adoni, who's referred to in the first pasuk, which is Avraham Avinu, will be a koyin forever. Al divrosi malki tzedek, on the words of Malki Tzedek. So the Gemara is explaining what that means is Al Diburay Shal Malki Tzedek, because Malki Tzedek, which is Shem, spoke wrongly and benched Hashem and benched Avraham before he benched Hashem. Therefore, Hashem says to Avraham, you instead will be the Kohen, unlike Malki Tzedek. Marsha explains also that what it means is Hashem is telling him, because you spoke up. When Shem did that, you spoke up, as the Gemara had just said, and you told Shem, how could you do that? How could you bench me ahead of Hashem? So because of that, you now have the schus to be the Kohen instead. Marsha, by the way, also refers to a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that it's not just David is calling Avraham Adoni in this pasuk. The capital is actually in the words of Eliezer Eved Avraham, that he's quoting, he's saying what Hashem said to my master, Avraham, because Eliezer was his slave, Shev Le'imini, and Hashem tells him, I will help you defeat the four kings, and so forth. The whole capital is talking about that, is talking about those events, the Gemara explains in Sanhedrin. So, behind the Chtiv, this is what the Pasuk means, when it says about Malki Tzedek, V'hu Choyin, L'keil Elyon, the Pasuk says, he was a Koyin to Hashem, the highest power, implying, Hu Koyin, Vein Zare Koyin, only he was a Koyin, his descendants were not, because he lost that as a result of benching Avraham before benching Hashem. And instead, it was saying it was taken away from him and given to Avraham.
What would it sound like?
It would have just said, it didn't have to say, but who would have said, but it could have said, Malki Tzedek Melech Shalom, Koyin L'keil Elyon, Hoitzi Lachem Boyoyin, or something like that. Back then it says, who, Koyin L'keil Elyon, is a mute that only he was a Koyin, his descendants were not. Hadron Alach HaBonadon.
It was